Yeah. Hello, very empty room. No, I'm convening the House Education Finance Committee for March 7th. And with that, first order of business, Representative Jordan, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have reviewed the minutes, and they look great, and I move their approval.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Jordan moves the minutes for March 6, 2024. Any discussion or questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The minutes for March 6, 2024 are adopted. Members, we're going to move on to our next order of business, which is part of our kind of talking about implementation this year with some of the programming that we put in place. And it's one of my favorite topics, and I know a lot of folks around the table care a lot about this, and that is CTE. So we have the folks here from the CTE consortiums around the state today. So we're going to hear a presentation from them and how they're starting to utilize that money. And members, I want to draw your attention to as well to a handout that's in your packet that kind of breaks down the different consortiums across the state, some of the highlights that they're working on, and what they're doing with the money that we gave them. So with that, I believe we have our first testifier, Cheryl Glazier, Career and Technical Projects Facilitator for Minnesota Service Cooperatives. Please go ahead and get settled and state your name for the record and title and who you're with, and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Cheryl Glazier, here representing the Minnesota Service Cooperatives as the Career and Technical Education Project Facilitator. The Minnesota Service Cooperatives really appreciate your support in helping us advance career and technical education across the entire state. We have a unique ability to be agile in assuring impact by leveraging partnerships with not only secondary schools, but also business, industry, labor, workforce, and higher education. We've helped over 50,000 students participate in new or enhanced CTE programs and leveraged over $1 million of partnership funds in the past year alone. A network of CTE practitioners from across the service cooperatives have established shared goals and are working together to address and advance opportunities. As Amy Grover, Associate Director with the Southeast Service Cooperative, stated, this is one of the most positive, promising, collaborative statewide committees I've participated in over the last 20 years. As we build momentum, we are expanding our reach, connecting with Perkins, workforce, and higher education institutions. As an example, our Career Connected Learning Community of Practice brings together over 30 individuals currently serving in career coordination and navigation roles across the state, some of which work for school districts, others who work for workforce agencies. These are examples of how, through shared learning, we are working toward a more coordinated system of support to address CTE needs across all 87 counties. We have identified three strategic priorities based on feedback from our partners and guidance provided in the legislative statute. Today, you'll hear a few examples of our work in these priority areas, which are student impact through career-connected learning, strengthened CTE through educator and district support, and advanced CTE partnerships throughout the state. Students are always at the center of our work, whether through impact funds to support new CTE programs or upgraded equipment and technology, or providing career navigation and pathway development programs across schools across the state. There are so many great stories of student impact that I could share with you that wouldn't have happened without your support and these funds. Students like 11 Nevis High School students who became the youngest ever in the state to receive their boiler operator licenses. A company on the Iron Range heard about it and offered all who passed the exam the opportunity for an internship at $22 an hour, after which they will be considered for employment at starting wages of $37 an hour. Or four students in Southeast Minnesota who decided to attend Riverland Community College for welding after participating in the Southeast Minnesota welding competition. Or Lily, who turned her interest in cars into an internship at Ford through Hibbing's automotive class. With your support, we are truly making a difference in the lives of students. Today, we are excited to have one student with us and join us virtually, Patrick Kroski, and he will share his CTE experience.
Thank you. With that, I believe Patrick's remote, so please, Patrick, state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Patrick Kroski. I'm a senior from Laverne High School. So I'll just be talking about my class experience, really. Right away when I got into the class, I wasn't planning on joining it. My guidance counselor kind of just threw me into it, so I figured I'd go into it with an open mind, just be excited about it. So the way the class worked, it was intro to medical careers class. The structure was, it was a lot of hands-on stuff, learning how to take blood pressures, take pulses of people in various areas, listening for lung sounds, just a lot of things like that. There was a lot of emphasis on being personable in the healthcare setting. So when you have a patient, you want to be a good person to them. You want to treat them with kindness. That was a big point of emphasis for our teacher, and she really relayed that message to us well. And then another part of the class was shadowing. So we had 20 hours of shadowing that we needed to do for the class. I did a lot of my shadowing with the EMS services here in Laverne, and that actually gave me the opportunity to join an EMT class, and during the summer I'll hopefully end up being an EMT. So I've gotten that opportunity really through the medical careers class. Furthermore, it's really just that class, it helped me solidify that I want to be in healthcare as I go into my college career, I guess you could say. It was really just a great start. I feel like I have a head start on just the knowledge that I've gained so far. I'm just really glad for this opportunity to be in the career and technical program because I've gotten that experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. I was wondering if you had a chance to maybe hang out for a few minutes. Normally, we wait until the testifiers are done to take questions, but I know you probably have to get back to class. So I'm going to check and see if members at the table have any questions for our student. Seeing none, I'm going to ask you one then. So you mentioned that your counselor just kind of put you in the class. How do other kids find out about CTE in your school? And do you think you would have chosen this certification if you hadn't had the opportunity to take a class?
It's actually right now for the juniors it's kind of going on. Our counselor goes into every classroom and she goes over course registration. So in the course registration talk that she has during class, she'll just briefly go over it, and then we get flyers about information for the class. And then throughout our school, sometimes there will be different flyers on the walls and things like that.
Thank you. Thank you, and we'll let you go. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we also have another remote testifier, Dustin Steenblock and Tom Luthner from Lakes County Service Cooperative. Please state your names for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dustin Steenblock. I am the program leader for Lakes Country Service Cooperative and Minnesota's CT Additional Licensure Program. Thank you for allowing me to share a bit about the CT Consortia Grant. This work helps to go with teachers across the state through our Alternative Teacher Licensure Prep Program and also our CTE Teacher Induction Program. First off, CTE TIP is partially funded by the grant. This project is a statewide project that mentors and guides new teachers in CTE, or teachers that are actually new to CTE. CTE TIP has already hosted about 188 teachers in just over 2 years, and participants are actually showing about 97% average teacher retention rate after the first year teaching while in the program. Participants have said that the most useful aspect of a CP tip was actually knowing that they were not alone. A pretty important piece. The second set of numbers I'd like to share relates to our licensure program. This actually, pamphlet or brochure in front of you showed a little over 300. We actually just went over the 400 mark for teachers of total enrollments in the past 3-4 years. Actually, of those 400 teachers, the Rural Consortia grant, or this, the former fund, was 147 enrollments funded. And the current MSC grant is already supporting 50 teachers as of today, and the number increases each and every day. For those listening in today, I just might want to share, in case you're not aware, CT stands for Career and Technical Education. And actually, as Mike Hernamella, he's one of the teacher licensure candidates of ours. He hails from District 196. He defines CTE as part of his program that we have him work through, as CT provides experiences and instills relevant skills that are marketable for high skill, high wage, and in-demand careers. He said making connections between those core classes and the applications that transfer to post-secondary and other career opportunities. And then here's my favorite part of his definition. He says that when he hears people say, "I wish they taught this in school," he answers it by saying CT teachers actually teach them. So with that, I thank you again for your time today and for your continued support of CTE in Minnesota. I'll remain on the call in case there are any questions or you need clarification this morning.
Thank you so much. And do we have Tom Luthner as well?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Tom Leitner and I'm the director of the Piney Prairie Cooperative Center located in Red Lake Falls. Thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of the districts that I serve. The impact of the Career and Technical Education grants in my region has been nothing short of amazing. The original grant brought 38 industry quality CNC routers to all my secondary schools. As word of our success spread, other consortiums have participated and we are currently have 70 districts across the Northwest and central regions of the state providing CNC router technology to our schools and students. In addition to the CNC router, instructors are also being provided with the professional development necessary to become confident and proficient in the use of this manufacturing technology. It's nearly impossible to tour a manufacturing industry and not see CNC technology in use. Thanks to the CTE grant dollars, students are having increased interest in choosing manufacturing as a future career. For example, Adriana Marsh from Bagley states, "The Creative Technology and Material Processing course has allowed me to learn about CNC and the design software. I've learned how to use Toolpath to create projects that have earned 2 blue ribbons through 4-H at the fair. The knowledge gained in using the CNC router has allowed me to join an apprenticeship program at Team Industries in Bagley." Brad Thompson, trades industry teacher at Carlstead, states, "During a recent tour of Waterworth's wood shop, I noticed a young man operating the CNC router computer program. The young man told my students that he learned how to use the CNC router in high school at Marshall County Central. The grant has also had an impact on my instructors." Mike Maltrude from Bagley states, the CTE grant funding has allowed me to keep up with technology and I have been able to create an entire class around the CNC router. And finally, Gabe Rath, trades and industry teacher from Brigula states, CNC technology is used in most, if not all, the industry in our area. And having students that can have a head start in CNC has great benefits for them and their careers. They not only get introduced to the experience running machines with the technology, but they get excited about the things that they're making. It makes my job easier when students get excited to come to class. There are fewer behavior issues. They're more focused and retain what they're learning. I have students that are spending their free time learning other functions of the programming that we have not covered or learned yet in class. In summary, the CTE grants have greatly improved the education of the students in the CTE programs that they are used in. The funds are changing perception of manufacturing careers, which in turn changes lives. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And members, while we have folks on remote and they're willing to hang around, does anybody have any questions? I have a quick one. So I know Lake County Country Service Cooperative has done a really good job helping train teachers. Could you tell us a little bit about, I think you also have the credits that teachers can get to do college in the schools? I know maybe it was Lake Service County Cooperative that also does that program.
Yes, we also host the 18 plus program, which obviously successfully help teachers with the tools that they need and in a way getting it in a pretty efficient way to help teach in the coursework, post-secondary education, articulations, and college credits as well. So, yeah, we're out in West Central Minnesota, for those that don't know, Lakes Country Service Cooperative works with 35 districts in West Central Minnesota, kind of from the Moorhead area down to Morris, over to the Alexandria area, kind of in that region. And we do host, like I said, the licensure program here. The only alternative teacher licensure program that's currently operating in the state. We actually have our application in the Pelsby for an initial licensure program as well to help some of those teachers coming from industry that need to get their teaching license and want to work into a 2 or 3, 4 license at some point in their career. And then obviously our CT tip is where we do most of our work through is through Lakes Country as well too. A lot of that work is underneath the umbrella of Minnesota CT now.
Thank you so much. And Representative Edelson, you had a quick question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is really helpful. I'm going to need a little bit of a refresh in terms of how CTE works. So if you guys could just remind me, there's a lot of stuff we learn about here. So is CTE and PSEO, are they synonymous? Are they the same thing? And then also in that same question, how many schools in Minnesota have CTE? Well, so I guess is CTE and PSEO, are they the same?
Maybe no. Ms. Glazier could, or do you want?
I'll let you take this.
Go ahead. State your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Jill Stewart Keller. I'm the proud Assistant Director of Career and Technical Education for Northeast Metro Schools in the intermediate districts. So in my role as administrator, it is often that we spend some time providing clarification, and it can get very gray in some areas, but this one's pretty clear cut. PSEO typically is taking college credit in the academic areas, so your science, your English, maybe your biology or algebra at the college level, and that is college earning credit in that area. You can also get PSEO college credits for career and technical education programs as well, but typically the CTE programs that we're speaking about today are related to those that are offered through the high schools throughout the entire state of Minnesota, and I can proudly say that all high schools throughout the state of Minnesota strive to offer high quality career and technical education programs such as those that we're highlighting today.
And I think Mr. Steenblock had something to add as well.
No, I'm just going to clarify the same thing as Jill did very well as well. It's very different, two different things. In fact, we'd like to say that oftentimes career and tech ed gives some opportunities for students to pursue the potential of a career before they maybe make a decision that actually might not be the best for them before they spend some time in a PSEO or any type of post-secondary after they leave the school walls of K-12. CT is typically going to be that very hands-on type of work, but we also influence our students through ways of things like life leadership, career opportunities. Our CT teachers are the teachers that are teaching oftentimes personal finance and computer science, our plant sciences, natural resources, so many different areas of career and tech ed, just allowing kids to explore a career, not just teach them to do a single job where they might make widgets all day, but that might be a great opportunity for them at some point in their life, but teaching them that there's options for entire career areas. So very two different things, but yeah, great question. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Edelson, follow up at all?
Madam Chair, and thank you for the clarification. That's really helpful. My sons I just enrolled them in high school at Edina. We have our school board chair here today. And they wanted to do this medic class. So I think it was like an EMT, but you had to be in 10th grade. So is it all of the CTE, does it start at 10th grade then? Is that?
Mm-hmm. Career and Tech Ed in Minnesota is typically supported for 9 through 12 students. Obviously, there are CT programs that are teaching students all the way down to fifth grade, so 5 through 12 licensure for our broad-based CT licenses. That's in Ag, Business, and Consumer Science, Family Consumer Sciences. The other CT areas are CT more driven to specific career areas, so think construction, manufacturing, transportation, communications. That's a 7 through 12 license. And you were kind of speaking more on that medical side. Medical careers is a career and tech ed license. Typically, we have most of our teachers in Minnesota that are underneath the medical careers. They have at minimum something like a EMT certification and have done at least 5 years of industry experience similar to that. But really, most are nurses coming from more in that healthcare setting. They're bringing their skills and their passion for healthcare to our students across the state. And that's actually one of our biggest focuses. If we do get approved for our initial teacher licensure program, we'll be actually helping medical careers teachers who are currently on a Tier 1 license, meaning that they're coming in as an initial teacher. They don't have the teacher prep portion, so we'll be helping them through the standards of effective practice and allowing them to work into a permanent licensure in Minnesota that would allow them to continue teaching medical careers within Career and Tech Ed.
Thank you, and I think Facilitator Glazier also had something to add, and then I'll go to Mr. Stramp.
Madam Chair and committee members, I just wanted to add in relationship to the age range that we're working with. One of the interesting things that we're going to be doing over the next year is piloting a program for 7th and 8th graders across the state because industry partners were reaching out to us and saying, we want to get to students at a younger age. We feel like by the time they're, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th grader, they're already having a path in mind, and we want to make sure that they know the local opportunities before they get to that point. So that is something that we're working towards. We've got several pilots planned for the next year of an existing program called Meteor that Sourcewell developed.
Thank you. And then Mr. Strom, you had something to add?
Madam Chair, the members, the testifiers have done a really nice job of describing the CTE program. Representative Edelson, I think the link you're thinking about is for many PSEO students, the ability to take a PSEO class is limited to 11th or 12th grade with certain exceptions, and one of those is the CTE course at the 10th grade level. So that may be where your issue on this question is. But that's a very tiny portion of the whole CTE world that's, as the testifiers have said, mainly provided through secondary programming at the high schools.
Thank you.
Mr.
Steenbach, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to say that one of the best things about this grant is CT is typically most often funded through Perkins funds, which is a federal grant source. That's very limited in Minnesota how we handle those funds. It's very 9 through 12 focused. And so, like Cheryl had just mentioned, one of the best things about this programming is the middle school programming that's happening because of these grant dollars. Where we're able to get into those lower grades, working through them and really realizing that career options and career exploration can happen at any point in someone's life, but really getting into that piece of middle school where the Perkins funds will not reach and would not be able to where this grant force can. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you. And then I think I'll go to Assistant Director Keller. Please state your name for the record again and your title and who you're with and proceed.
Gladly. Thank you for having me here today. My name is Jill Stewart Keller, and I'm the proud Assistant Director of Career and Technical Education at Northeast Metro Intermediate School District, representing the districts north and east of St. Paul. This biennium, the four intermediate school districts were included in the opportunity to provide additional resources, which will allow us to offer innovative career and technical education programming that removes barriers for all students. The four metro intermediate school districts provide CTE programming opportunities to tens of thousands of high school students enrolled in the 44 school districts across the metro area. This programming allows students to gain a competitive advantage of professional skills, industry certifications, college credits, and confidence about their plans after high school. Examples of the use of these funds include initiatives to increase access to programs by creating new programs that align with local business and industry needs, supporting programming to special populations, such as students that are navigating alternative routes to diploma, such as an ALC, English language learners, and students with special needs. It will provide classroom instructional tools that are based on industry best standards to provide in-depth experience for what can be expected behind those classroom doors. It provides funding for resources such as transportation to these career and tech centers that our intermediates offer, as well as creates additional opportunities for students to earn college credit and industry certifications through enhancing our business and industry and post-secondary partnerships. We thank you so much for the support. I cannot tell you how much value it adds to our programming. You are giving thousands of students the opportunity to gain that competitive advantage and confidence about their plans after graduation. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, members. Any further questions or thoughts from the table? Representative Ream.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was lucky enough to be able to tour the Southwest Metro District 288 facility, and it was really interesting. Was able to see the automotive area where they had cars, where students were able to learn how to you know, change oil and stuff like that. There's also a cosmetology room that was buzzing with all kinds of students really interested in that. And it seems like there's a lot of different courses that they offer, including computer repair, culinary artistry, drone and aviation technology, early child care, electrician services, health science, photography, and video production. It does seem like it really provides a lot of great opportunities for our high school students. So I appreciate the work that the intermediate school districts do. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Director Steen, did you have one more? Director, sorry, Glazer, did you have one more thing to say?
Madam Chair and committee members, if I could just add a closing comment.
Absolutely.
I cannot tell you how excited it is to work with all these students that are taking part in these projects because of your support. CTE is for all students, as you saw from Patrick. It's for the student who is unsure about their future and may not even see a future for themselves, all the way to the student who plans to attend a four-year college. It's important for all students. And so we appreciate your continued support and investment as we make Minnesota a CTE star.
Thank you so much, and thank you for coming today to talk to us about all the good work that you're doing. And, well, this will be a continuing conversation about how we can work together. With that, members, we're going to go to our first bill on the agenda. We have House File 3983. Representative Bennett. Once you get settled, you want to move your bill before the committee with the intention of laying over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 3983 with the intention to lay it over.
And Representative Bennett, I believe you have a DE-2. Would you like to briefly explain that?
I would love that. Thank you. So,
or maybe just, you know what, why not, members, why don't we adopt it to get the bill in the shape? Because the DE is like the whole bill, and then you can go on to describe it. So, members, all those, anybody have any questions on the DE-2 amendment? With that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. The DE-2 amendment is adopted. Representative Bennett, thank you,
Madam Chair. You are correct. That's basically the whole bill. So I would just like to start out by reminding members that last session, I'm thankful that the chair included in our committee in the final education bill the grants for the special education teacher pipeline program. And it has been already active and working this year. Money has been dispersed, and we're going to hear about that more from my testifier. And but we do have additional needs. And so what my bill does, which the goal, obviously, of these grants is to help reduce the shortage of special education teachers. We all know that's a huge need, both rural and metro. And it's done by offering tuition support. So the original grant program targeted only Tier 1 and 2 teachers. And my bill would actually expand the eligibility of this grant program to all four tiers, so Tier 1, 2, 3, and 4. And you might ask, well, why does a Tier 3 or 4 teacher who already has a license in education, why would they need this grant? And that's because we have a number of teachers throughout the state who are teaching special education with a provisional license. They are fully licensed regular education teachers, but they are teaching special education and do not have that full degree. And these people are, we need them to get that full special education degree as well. There are also regular education teachers who are out there who want to come and teach special education, but they just don't have the finances to do it. So they have that regular teacher's license. An additional benefit of this grant that was passed last year is that it was used by the state as part of a correctional plan sent to the federal government to rectify the federal government's complaint about Tier 1 teachers in special ed teaching more than 3 years. And this bill does not interfere with that purpose. The bill also retains the prioritization of Tier 1 and 2, but then just adds 3 and 4 so we can pull in some of those teachers and get more special ed teachers in front of kids. And I'll just finally say before I turn this over to my testifier that being able to utilize these tier three and four teachers is actually a cost saving. It costs less to get them up to par for what they need special ed because they have a lot of that education already under their belt. And secondly, it's faster. And so we can get those special, we can get them up to a full degree, special ed degree, much faster than we can tier one and two. So it is something that's very important. And I'm going to turn this over to Dan right now and let him explain more why this is.
All right.
Thank
Good morning,
you.
Madam
Please,
Chair.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Dan Armagas. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Again, I'm Dan Armagas. I'm the executive director for the Southern Minnesota Education Consortium. I've been a director of special education for over 20 years, and this is my third time testifying on behalf of the special education pipeline bill. I do so on behalf of MSBA, MREA, AMSD, MESA, SEE, and the MACE organization, who also support the proposed changes to this bill. I want to start by saying thank you. Thank you for passing the original special education pipeline bill. This legislation has helped my cooperative greatly, and I would say districts across the state. It has helped address the OSEP concerns with the state tier one licensure and has effectively put more special education teachers into the classroom. Our cooperative applied for the special education pipeline grant with the other members of our Region 10 group. As a region, we are made up of 57 districts. Together, we partnered with 13 different colleges and are currently sending back 22 tier one and two teachers on our first phase of the special education pipeline grant with another application process starting in the next couple months. This has been a tremendous success and I am extremely grateful. That being said, there is still a shortage in special education workforce. I've had special education positions open for years without receiving even one licensed candidate. I'm still sitting in on general education teacher interviews so that I can recruit the candidates that are not selected for their positions to fill my open special ed positions. As a result, I have some amazing tier three and tier four teachers that are currently on out-of-field placements. One of these amazing teachers is working in my level three autism program. This is a tough position to fill. She loves it. She loves the kids. She loves the challenge that comes with being in this type of position. She would tell you she was meant for the position. Her coworkers and mentors will tell you she's a quick learner and that she's a perfect fit. Being a tier three teacher on an out-of-field placement, she already knows teacher pedagogy and methodology, so she adapted easy to the position. She has been in the position now for 2 years and will love to stay, but is limited on how long she can be on an out-of-field placement. When I talked to her about pursuing special education licensure, she states she wants to, but she just finished one degree and is financially unable to pursue another. This is the most common response I get with my tier three and four teachers on to why they're not pursuing their special education license. We want to address the tier one issue, and that should have priority as it currently states in the bill. But I want to address the overall workforce shortage around special education, and this updated language will do that. It continues to help districts get fully licensed teachers into the classroom. We are currently on the correct path with the Grow Your Own and the special education pipeline bills, but this amended language will help us stay on that path and will open new opportunities for additional teachers. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony and for all the work that you're doing to make sure we get more SPED teachers in the classroom. With that, members, any questions? Representative Clardy.
Just a comment to Representative Bennett. Thank you for bringing this to us. And yes, this will help with the legal issue that is going on with the government as far as special ed teachers in the right licensure area. So thank you so much for bringing this.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Clardy. Mr. Strom, I have a quick question too. Can a teacher hold two licenses at the same time if they have a traditional tier three or four license and then move into a SPED tier three or four, would they have to reapply for the traditional tier three and four? Can they hold two licenses at once? Ms. Perra.
Madam Chair, members, So the special ed is the field license, so they could add fields to that tier three or four.
Thank you. That helps. I was uncertain, so I always ask when you're not sure. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Help me remember. Did we address something like this last year where we were trying to see if we could just maybe Mr. Strom or Ms. Pira could talk about that, because I'm just trying to see what we've historically done. I thought we did something on this last year. Did we not?
Ms. Pira?
Madam Chair, members, so on the special ed pipeline?
Moving, Madam Chair, Ms. Pira, I thought we had did some sort of initiative to help with Tier 1 and Tier 2 move to the next tier.
Ms. Pira, do you want to describe again the underlying language that we put into place last year?
Yes. The pipeline program that was enacted last year provided grants to districts, charter schools, and cooperatives partnering with teacher preparation programs to help unlicensed staff or Tier 1 or 2 teachers get Tier 3 or 4 special education licenses. And that was $20 million in fiscal year 24 and $10 million in fiscal year 25 for that program.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess I'm wondering if we've seen any progress with that. I don't know if there would be any update or who would be able to give an update. Maybe that's MDE or...
Representative Edelson, I think we can maybe pull those numbers from PELSPY, but Mr. Okay. Uni, did you have something to add? And then just pull up a chair and state your name for the record. Go ahead, Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. And I have some updates here. We are very, very close to completing what are called our OGANs, which is like the finalization of the contracts for this first round for fiscal 24 for that initial bucket of funds. We're looking at covering about 25 grantees, and these grantees are like the cooperatives or districts that form outside of cooperatives or charters that form up outside of cooperatives to really maximize the number of educators that they can cover. That's going to represent about 150 LEAs or local education agencies, so charters or districts or cooperatives. Looking at the breakdown, just kind of the geographic spread, we're looking at about $12.75 million in greater Minnesota, and the Twin Cities metro area is around $7.2 million. And I have an estimated number of participants that we're trying, that we think we can cover. Let me just see if I can find this. So the applicants that are estimated to be served are around just under 260 Tier 1 teachers, and just over 230 Tier 2 teachers, and 430 other non-licensed staff to get that licensure. But that's an estimate of what we have based on the applications that we're going to be wrapping up here. I'm sorry, not applications, but contracts that we hope to close out soon. So we can't, unfortunately, talk publicly about who they are just quite yet. Happy to get the committee that information, one that is publicly available, and then I know that we'll be soon, I think, not exact dates, we'll be opening up the applications for fiscal 25.
Wonderful. Representative Edelson.
Mr. Uni, for that. I was trying to understand the broader picture of here, so thank you so much.
Thank you, and we'll make sure that once we get that information, we get it out to the committee, because it's always good to see how the money is being spent and how many people we're helping with it. So, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bennett, for bringing this bill forward. I know that we would have loved to have also heard it in policy, but it really didn't need to go there first, so glad that I'm on finance could listen to and understand the need for that additional flexibility for how these grants are administered to include this important group. And I guess just going forward, knowing how important this work is and how much impact the grants have had, and thank you for that information that we just heard, that we know we need to keep watching, and that there should be another pipeline bill in the next budget year. And I hope that that's something that you continue to be on top of and make sure that our students are getting the most qualified and best prepared teachers, as we know how important that education is. Thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you, Mr. Pryor. Representative Kreisha.
I'm
good.
Okay. With that, members, final word, Representative Bennett.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And just a couple points. Rep. Edelson, thank you for bringing that up. I maybe wasn't quite clear enough that this is actually amending that language from last year that we did pass, that current grant program, and adding additional eligibility. Another thing I should have mentioned is in this bill, it will allow schools that have already received this grant funding, if they have met all of their tier one and two teachers' needs and they have extra money left, it will allow them to pull in some tier three or four teachers with that leftover monies. And then finally, Madam Chair, I am one of those teachers that held a dual licensure, special ed and regular ed, and kept them both active. Of course, I'm retired now and they're not active, but I have a feeling if I was still teaching that I'd have Mr. Armagost or another special ed director trying to get me to switch over to special ed. I did teach some special ed in my younger years and I loved it. We just need to get more special ed teachers well qualified in front of kids, and I think this will help do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett, and thank you for keeping an eye on this and making it even more effective. So with that, we renew the motion that House File 3983 as amended be laid over for a possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Next up, we have Representative Lee with House File 3492. Once you get settled, go ahead and proceed. I will move House File 3492 before the committee with the intention of laying it over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. And Representative Lee, now that the bill is before us, you can proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Always good to be back in front of education finance. Thank you. And also, I wanted to thank the committee for funding last year's bill, House File 759, at $1 million over the biennium to get us to where we are today. This investment by the legislature last year allowed MDE to hire one full-time staffer dedicated to computer science, and it also created a working group that pulled together a draft state plan during the interim to give us a path towards streamlining computer science in Minnesota schools. On February 1, the working group released its draft report for public comment, as the legislature had requested, and then we are expecting them to release their final report on March 22nd in about 2 weeks. As we've already seen from the draft report, there are critical next steps that the legislature must take to ensure that our students and our state are not at a competitive disadvantage. And I believe there should be copies in your folders. If not, happy to share them. And so this is why we're here today, right? So for folks who have been following the issue, Minnesota has ranked last in the nation for access to computer science courses in high school for the last 3 years. So it's important that we continue the momentum, which we started last year, to turn back almost 20 years of no investment. This year's bill before us today is House File 3492. This will equip the department with necessary resources to execute this comprehensive plan that the working group has worked so hard on. We're also hoping that we can continue to fund the work of the working group, just understanding that there's so much more to be done. So while MDE is still finalizing their plan, we know that funding will be crucial, and I look forward to incorporating any necessary changes to accommodate specific recommendations once the final plan is published. I want to note there was an A1 amendment that was posted. We are not offering it today because there is a technical issue with the amendment that we have to work out. But thankfully, we're just laying the bill over in committee, and so we are going to have further discussions. If you've had a chance to preview the draft report, which I think one of my witnesses can speak to, the clear next step is to work on licensure for teachers who will be teaching these courses. And so happy to come back if we want to have that discussion publicly or, you know, when we consider an omnibus. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to my witnesses. And, let's go over step.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
And actually, Chair, if we could have the remote testifiers first.
Perfect.
If that is
that
okay.
Makes much more sense. So we have Amina Tezek, a student on remote. Please state your name for the record, what school you go to, and proceed.
Hello, I'd like to start this off by thanking you all for providing me with this amazing opportunity to speak up for what I believe in. It means a lot to me, and it's something I've always been passionate about. My name is Amina Tizak, and I'm a student at Hopkins Virtual EDU, a public hybrid school, which, for those of you who don't know, means that some of our students attend both online and in person. The first time I encountered computer science was when I was really little, probably about 6 or 7. My older sibling had a Scratch account, and like every younger sibling ever, I was interested in whatever my older sibling was. I had no idea what I was doing, but I knew I liked it, even if it was incredibly confusing at the time. Over the next few years, I sporadically used things like Khan Academy and Scratch to try and learn more about coding, because it was something that I was really interested in, even if I didn't have access to anything even remotely similar to an experienced teacher at the time. In 9th grade at my old school, I encountered a class that was supposed to be available to me the following year. They were teaching Python, and I thought that was amazing because I'd been told all my life that Scratch and Khan Academy weren't real coding, and that I'd never really used what I learned there. But I knew Python was some sort of real coding language, and I wanted to learn it really bad. I went to my math teacher at the time. I was taking geometry, and I was not good at geometry. I had a C+. She told me that I couldn't take the class unless I had a grade that was above a B. And because she taught the Python class too, I believed her. Later, she told me that if I aced the next midterm, then she would let me take the class. I did not ace the midterm. And I, incredibly embarrassed, did not go back to talk to her about that at all. If whether or not you were good at coding relied entirely on your grade in math, I would never be any type of coding professional. I am not particularly good at math, and I think a lot of the time people who aren't geniuses in math are discouraged from pursuing careers in science in general. If this was more extreme, if there was a class that I had on my schedule and I wasn't barred from it, it would be easier than walking into the robotics club and realizing that I was one of the only girls there. Or telling folks I liked coding and getting told that everything I've ever done is just games and garbage. Right now, I'm attending a computer science class for just about the first time in my life, and I'm having fun. My little sister got to start taking computer science in 5th grade, and she recently said that she could see herself pursuing a career in it. My older sibling, who did Scratch and Khan Academy and signed up for the robotics program I backed out of, is now intending to pursue a career in medical engineering. When you provide students with opportunities, they take them, and they make the best of them. Give our students the opportunity to pursue computer science. Support HF 3492. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And with that, we have Jennifer Wallace, an elementary teacher in Hopkins as well. Please state your name for the record and proceed. We're having a little...
Good morning, legislators.
Thank you. I don't know if you... We're just trying to make sure your microphone's on, and it is, so we can hear you. And state your name for the record and proceed.
There we go. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 3492. My name is Jennifer Retka Wallace, and I am a school library media specialist at Glen Lake Elementary with Hopkins Public Schools. Since 2016, I have had the opportunity to explore coding and robotics with my elementary students. Using the knowledge and information I have gained through code.org workshops and Minnesota Code Savvy Teacher Cohort, I began learning about computer science with my young students. At the elementary level, much of the coding we do is block-based coding, dragging blocks of code together to make a program. I have seen how engaged and excited students are to program a Sphero or Ozobot robot. Students who have struggled with traditional subjects are energized by the problem-solving challenges of their self-paced coding course. Currently, I have 2 4th-grade girls leading their class in collaborating and debugging, persevering together to figure out the next coding challenge that a classmate brings to them. I am amazed by a 5th grader's creativity in designing the fire flare of a spaceship as it takes off and lands. Not only was the coding and creative animation really cool, but the proud look on this young man's face said it all as he was able to share the product of his painstakingly detailed programming work. It is so It is so powerful to witness students creating with their technology. So over these years, I have had parents say to me, my child is so excited about the computer programming and robotics you are doing. Where can we get a robot? Or where can my child learn more? And I know that these students who have the privilege of support at home will find the opportunity to learn more computer science. But what about all of my other students, many who do not have this additional support at home? Don't they too deserve to learn about the power of computer science? When and where will they have the opportunity to learn more computer science? Today, technology is in so many parts of our lives, and I believe Minnesota children deserve to learn how that technology works. Computer science continues to be a field dominated by white males. And by starting computer science in elementary school, it is my hope that underrepresented groups, girls, students of color, will be exposed to computer science vocabulary, activities, and mindsets so that they will not only self-select the next available computer science course, but most importantly, they will see themselves as a prepared insider in that content. Our world needs females and students of color writing the algorithms that shape our future. These students deserve to learn, practice, and develop computer science skills in order to combine them with their passions to contribute to our world. Every Minnesota student deserves the opportunity to learn computer science. Thank you for this opportunity to share my computer science experiences in the classroom and my heart for teaching computer science to our young people. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And with that, next up we have Tracy Carroll, high school teacher at Hopkins. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Carol Tracy, and I'm a library media specialist for Hopkins Virtual EDU, a K-12 online and blended school. I'm here to advocate for the inclusion of House Bill 3492, a vital step toward educational equity in Minnesota. Computer science is not just for people who like to code or play computer games. It's for everyone. It's key for career readiness, fostering skills like critical thinking, problem solving, and creativity. Yet many students, especially in underserved areas, miss out on these opportunities, widening the equity gap. Did you know that Minnesota ranks dead last in the nation for computer science course offerings in high schools? Minnesota is far behind all other states, with a mere 21% of our high schools offering computer science courses, placing us at the bottom nationally. This is stark compared to our neighbors in Iowa, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin, who all rank well above Minnesota. In the Hopkins District, we've seen the transformative impact of computer science education. It sparks curiosity, drives innovation, and opens doors to diverse career paths, but we're constrained by resources. The $8 million proposed in this bill is not merely a funding request. It is an investment in the future of our children and our state. With these funds, we could enhance our computer science programs, increase teacher professional development, and take a step toward ensuring that all students have the chance to engage with this essential discipline from an early age. This isn't simply an educational issue. It's about economic development and diversifying the tech industry. By backing this bill, you'll help provide equal opportunities for all our students, boosting our local economy and positioning Minnesota as a competitive player globally. Thank you for considering the far-reaching benefits of this bill. I urge you to support this for the advancement of our students, our community, and the future of Minnesota.
Thank you, and I just want to make sure it's Carol Tracy, not Tracy Carroll, right? Thank you, sorry about the confusion. Next up, we have Erica Allenberg, the school board chair in Edina. Go ahead and state your name and title for the record and proceed.
I'm Erica Allenberg, business school board chair, Edina School Board.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives. My name is Erica Allenberg, and I am chair of the Edina School Board. However, I'm here representing the Minnesota School Board Association. I also represent the Minnesota School Board Association on the state's current computer science working group. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of HF3492, which is a good and necessary step for increasing access to computer science education for all Minnesota students. I am here with a fairly simple message. First, I fully believe that all students in our state need to have access to quality computer science educational programming. As a state, we need to be preparing all students with the holistic skill set they need to be the next generation of thinkers and workers that will fuel their success and our state's success. And foundational computer science skills are critical for this. Second, in order to do this, I implore you to be realistic about the financial and operational constraints our school districts are currently under. Access to quality computer science education for all cannot be accomplished without adequate and consistent funding for all districts across the state. And please keep in mind that certain rural and suburban districts have extra challenges from an infrastructure, hardware, and staff shortage perspective. Funding for educator training, licensing, curriculum development, and other associated costs is not something districts currently have. I am not being overly dramatic in saying that the vast majority of districts in our state are suffering from budgetary shortages. The Association of Metropolitan School Districts is reporting that in the metro area, Rochester and Duluth alone, districts are facing more than $300 million in shortages for the 2024-2025 school year. Our district alone, just on Monday, cut $3 million from our budget, reducing things like nurses, media specialists, psychologists, and other critical student supports. So asking districts to prioritize computer science curriculum without funding is just not feasible. In conclusion, while I fully support this bill and genuinely appreciate the allocated funding, it is simply not enough to implement computer science education statewide. And without robust continued funding, we risk unintended consequences, like furthering the gaps that are already present in our state in computer science education across rural areas and with many different student demographics, such as girls and young women and students of color. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your service to our state.
Thank you so much, School Board Chair Allenberg. With that, I think we have one more testifier, Hannah Wiseman from the Director of Policy from Code.org. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Hannah Wiseman, and good morning to everyone. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be here. I am the Director of Policy at Code.org, which is a national nonprofit advocating for the expansion of K-12 computer science. And we're really lucky to work with so many great advocates here in Minnesota. And you might remember I was sitting before you all just about this time last year. And so I'm really grateful to be back and talk about some of the great progress and what we need to do to keep going forward. And so last year, you all helped pass historic legislation that Representative Lee mentioned, the first investment in over 20 years in computer science education. And in particular, the position at the Minnesota Department of Education and the working group has already made massive strides in our state. And they've worked really hard in what is less than a year to make those strides. But the work is not done yet. And as Representative Lee said, the working group is currently finalizing their recommendations. And we know that this funding, the legislation in front of you, is going to be crucial to helping enact those recommendations. It might feel like a daunting task. I know we've said a few times that we're last in the nation, and we've been using the slogan last to first, so we've got a lot of spaces to move up. But I would love to bring the committee back actually to the 1970s to remind us that we actually have a strong computing history in this state. So many of you might remember the Oregon Trail game, and that actually came out of Minnesota. That was created by the Minnesota Education Computing Collaborative, which was created by this very body with the express purpose of bringing computers to Minnesota schools. The initial budget in 1973 was $3.6 million for 2 years to bring computers to Minnesota schools. And it was wildly successful. Within 4 years of this consortium being created, 96% of Minnesota students had access to computers. That is astounding in 1977. And we were the leader in the world. We're unfortunately no longer the leader. This consortium was no longer funded by the 1990s. And once we stopped making that sustained investment, our students fell behind. And not only did we stop making that investment, other states started really increasing their investment. And so this legislation before you focuses first and foremost on building and expanding the capacity of teachers.
I'm actually a former teacher myself, and I know how important it is to invest in teachers. Our teachers want to make sure that our students are prepared for the 21st century. But to do that, we need to prepare our teachers. Many of our teachers do not have the skills and the knowledge and the background to be teaching computer science, whether it be at an elementary or high school level. And the advantage of being last is we can look at what other states have done. And so we've seen at code.org how impactful legislation similar to this has been. In Iowa, for example, they've allocated over $3 million, and that has resulted in more than 1,000 teachers being trained through the K-12 spectrum. And they now have 84% of their high schools teaching computer science. And just a few years ago, they were under 50%. So there's been a massive difference, and a difference quite quickly to impacting those students. I would last like to say that in addition to my role at code.org, I'm also a proud alumni of St. Paul Public Schools, and I was lucky enough to attend a high school where I was given access to computer science. However, it was far from ideal. It wasn't until 12th grade that I got to take a course in computer science. At that point, I'd already thought I knew what I wanted to do career-wise, and it didn't involve computer science. And I was also one of the only two girls in a class of over 30 students. And so while I was really grateful to get that opportunity, it was a challenging experience, and I wasn't sure that I could continue to pursue computer science. Fortunately, I did, and that's what brings me here today. And I want all Minnesota students to have not only the experience I had, but a better experience, an early exposure to computer science, a positive and affirming experience where they could believe that they could pursue this career should they choose. Just as we have with other subjects, we don't believe that all our students should become mathematicians or scientists, but we want them all to have that ability to expose themselves to that crucial knowledge. So I really appreciate you letting me testify, and I urge you to support House File 3492. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And Representative Lee, I think we glossed over it really quick in the beginning, and one of the main reasons why you're before Ed Finance is, can you explain a little bit about the grants for existing computer science programs in Section 4 and the different appropriations so that we can try to beef up computer science in our schools?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So I actually think the witnesses teed it up really well. As noted, the bill is only asking for a total of $8 million, $4 million for this capacity building, like I like to say, on the supply side for teachers, and then $4 million to support programs that currently exist. So just taking a step back, I think we've heard a little bit about, the need for foundational education, and really appreciated the elementary school teacher kind of telling us, like, what it looks like to have elementary school kids code. The goal in Minnesota is for a K-12 system for our kids to learn computer science, right? Because this will be as important as knowing how to do math or, knowing how to write good essays, right? The reason why we're taking this approach is, we want to make sure that our teachers feel equipped. As we heard from our school board chair and all the witnesses, we need to support our teachers and equip them and pay for that. And then on the other side, right, we have to walk and chew gum and continue teaching our students this. And so the bill attempts to do that. This is based on the amount that we'd asked for last year in House File 759. I anticipate that the final report that will be released March 22nd should give us some numbers not MDDE, because I do want to just clarify for the committee here. The working group will give a recommendation and will lay out a sample budget that we can consider. I've been instructed to also clarify that that may not be MDE's position and the governor's, but do want to just let members know that there will be a number that this working group has worked on during the interim to tell us, like, what it would cost to implement such a state plan and the incremental steps. This bill before you guys today is a total of $8 million because we're trying to scale things down, understanding also this is a policy year, and typically, we're not funding, we're not doing money programs, but do appreciate the chair's indulgence and the indulgence of the members in considering, if there is a supplemental to fund this initiative and, like I said, continue the momentum.
Thank you so much, Representative Lee, and I wish we could have put more money into this program last year, especially for the licensure piece and the equipment and the work that the schools can do. With that, we'll move to members' questions from the table. Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a quick question about the eligible uses on line 6.9. So would the funds in this bill only be for computer science programs that target underrepresented groups, or would it be for any computer science program?
Representative Lee, was it 6.9? Representative West?
Yeah, 6.9 through 6.11. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lee.
So I would point the member to line 6.9 with may and not shall.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative West, does that answer your question?
I have another. Well, yes, it does, and I'm glad to hear that. But I do have one more thing.
Go ahead, Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a positive program. We need to put more money behind computer science, so I strongly support the concept. I mean, I'm a massive nerd. I built my first computer when I was 12 years old. This is what we need more of in our schools. The one thing that concerns me in this bill, which I know you're still going to work on it, which is good to hear, is 20% cap on administration fees seems a little high. With that and the 15% cap on advertising, theoretically, 65 cents on the dollar would be going to training teachers and recruiting teachers and getting this into our schools and helping our schools do it. I think it would be good to see those caps lowered a little bit. I understand most schools probably won't max out those, but if they probably won't, why would we be using state dollars in that kind of inefficient manner? We don't even want to open the door to that. So I think a lower cap there could be very helpful for making this an even more successful program. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I think so. These numbers are there because there's a recognition that we're starting a larger state program, and so there are other states. I think Tennessee or Indiana where they mandated a high school graduation requirement, and there were not enough teachers to teach computer science. And so, you know, we want to kind of find a medium ground where we're supporting our teachers, our schools, our school districts, and also making sure that, you know, our kids are ready for a 21st century education.
Thank you. Representative West, any further follow-up? Okay. Representative Edelson.
Thank you. I know I'm talking a lot today. I apologize. Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Lee, I'm very supportive of this bill. So in 2022, there were 800,000 cyber crimes that were reported. And then you look at the cost to the United States, it's upwards of $10 billion. So if we are underinvesting in even the pipeline to get kids in there, but we care about crime, like, that's a bad idea, right? We have to create, making sure that we are going to be able to fight. This is what, honestly, what a lot of crimes are going to look like in the future, specifically financial crimes, which will hurt our property tax base, which will hurt our state. So if we want to invest in the state of Minnesota, I think we should give you as much money as we possibly can. So thank you.
Representative Edelson, thank you. Representative Lee, any comments on that?
Say less, more money, please. I think, but seriously, I do want to just emphasize one of Rep. Edelson's points that, 20 years ago, or I don't know, maybe it's been that long, when I was in kindergarten, we used like 5-inch floppy disks, right? I'm 35 now, and everything is online, and when I want data, it's on like a Dropbox site or something. And so we really don't know what, work in the future will look like. And so, yes, we want to invest in our kids now because the workforce of the future is unimaginable to us right now, actually. And so appreciate that. I hadn't even thought about what the future of crime might look like. And really, right now, we see there are hackers hacking our school districts and stealing student data. There are, nefarious actors holding ransoms with multi-billion dollar corporations. And so We want to be ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. And when I was in high school, there wasn't an internet. So there you go. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Representative Lee, thank you for bringing this. I hate the spot where I sit, to be honest, in this committee. I feel like I'm talking to the wall. Maybe it's because I put in the corner or something. But anyways, so computer science, fantastic. I mean, I think we need to invest in it. And I would echo something that Representative Edelson said about doing as much as we can. We can look at what we did last session and look at what our school districts are telling us from what we did last session. We heard about Edina's cutting $3 million, Prior Lake Savage is cutting just under $5 million, New Prague schools are cutting just under $4 million. So I think instead of looking at and how we're going to spend, you know, spend more, and we need to invest in the READ Act, totally understand that. But what we should be doing, in my opinion, is looking back at the mistakes that we made, the things we missed, the missed opportunities, whatever you want to call it, and then reinvesting that money so that our schools are not making these cuts that they're making. So I'll leave it at that, you know, so that we can, if we do that, then we can actually support our schools. And then in the future, we can invest in these important programs. I'd end with just caution us about adding additional things right now, not only on the department, but also on our school, on our schools. We had Superintendent Law here yesterday saying very explicitly, no more. Like, let us figure this stuff out before we add more on. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. I have one more person on the list. I didn't know if you wanted to respond at all.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I will, too, because I think this is one of the mistakes we made last year, that we didn't put enough money into computer science. But Representative Grisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Lee, and to your testifiers. No opposition to the bill. The concept's right on. And keep working on that. I am curious, and I'd like to give you an opportunity to clarify a statement. You had mentioned not consistent with the governor and MDE, and I wanted to make sure I understood what your clarifying comments on that were.
Representative Lee.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So the clarifying piece was the working group that we formed last year consists of teachers, business and industry leaders, students, and a bunch of folks in the public who were tasked with, this problem by the legislature to say, hey, like, we're Minnesota. We don't want to be last anymore. Can you please put together a modernized plan for us to streamline computer science education? And so I just wanted to make it get very clear that that working group is separate than MDE and any proposal that the executive branch might put forward.
Representative Keisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you. And I just heard a couple things, and since this is public record, you said I was instructed to do this. You know, I just want to make sure this is your bill, your idea, you have supporters, and I was hoping that what we weren't getting out of this or an inference was that there are some directives coming from MDE and the governor and because I've seen that too often, and I think you have a great idea, and certainly as a legislator, we have our own ideas and powers and should carry those, so good luck.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, and then final comments.
Madam Chair, thank you. I mean, we all have our own election certificates, and, you know, as a very, very good student of civics who now sits as an elected official, I absolutely take that, executive branch authority, executive branch oversight very carefully, and I know we are co-equal branches, and so I appreciate you amplifying that, and I love that we both appreciate that. For me, I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't speaking for the department. I know they're here, but didn't want to bring Mr. Adosh up here to make that clarification, and so that's why, and I just want to make sure folks know, like, how much we asked of the working group. And like how much time and resources went into that. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lee, did you want a final comments on the bill itself?
Sure. I just want to tell folks of the committee or want to thank members for a really good, robust discussion and appreciate support from both sides of the aisle. I think, we want Minnesota students to succeed, and we also want Minnesota to succeed. Something that I left till the end was that was touched upon a little bit was this is a major workforce boon, right? We talk a lot about how, we want Minnesota businesses to grow, and, quite frankly, it is a really hard proposition, to recruit people to come and live in sub-zero temperatures. It may not be the case this year, but this is something that we constantly hear from, a lot of the companies that we have in Minnesota, which are household staples, right? And so because this is a finance committee, I want to make sure that members take away that, we want to be mindful of how we spend state dollars, but this is precisely why we have to invest now, because you know, going back like we're doing now and you know, trying to get through 20 years of no investment will cost us even more. And so appreciate your consideration of including this in a potential supplemental or omnibus.
Thank you so much, Representative Lee. With that, I'll renew the motion that House File 3492 be laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Members, with that, this is the end of our week. I hope everybody enjoys their weekend. But next week we will be meeting again on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at our regular time in our regular place. With that, we are adjourned.